Well, this morning, for those of you who have been with us, we're going to continue in this series. This may seem like a movement to a different topic, but I guarantee you it's not. And it will all make sense, or at least that's my theory. It will all make sense by the end. The title of this particular talk is A Good Time for a Good Time. By way of review, for those of you who have been with us, to help those who maybe haven't, what did we talk about the first week? What did we learn about creation? Just give me a couple quick main points. Creation is. Very good. What else? What's that? It's excessive. Excellent. Meaning, it's excessive in that it wasn't necessary. God does it because he wants to. And it's excessive in its very act of creation. There is a lot of the good stuff. That everywhere you look, it shows kind of the abundance of God, right? From the sky, the stars in the sky, to the sand on the seashore, to the animals, and so forth. And then we talked about not just that creation is, and it's good, and it's excessive. What did we talk about? Was it last week? Oh, we covered 2 weeks because I couldn't finish the first week. That's what it was. Yes, so our role in creation is that we are to give thanks, right? We are the part of God's creation that's been given a voice in order to really be the priests for all of creation, right? To speak on behalf of creation about the goodness of God. And so we come into creation realizing that everything is a gift, right? Because we didn't do any of it, and here we are. And that has a requirement, which is to be thankful for the gift. What else? We're to be thankful. You said something else, Michelle. What'd you say? Yeah. So to be thankful, part of Thanksgiving is to enjoy it, right? To embrace the goodness of God and creation and to use it rightly. That, you know, we're not Gnostics to where we're trying to avoid the good of creation because somehow that's sinful. What is sinful? Is there anything in creation that's bad? No. Except what? Yeah, us. We went bad. right? To the pure, everything is pure, right? But to those who are defiled, unbelieving, nothing is pure. And Paul tells us both in Titus and Timothy that God, everything that God created is good and is to be used with thanksgiving, right? That's the big kind of qualification, that our use of it should be a use that we know that we're creatures receiving a good thing from a creator, and that it should be a circular reality. We receive these things, we make use of them, and then it goes back to God in thanksgiving and appreciation. So we're grateful, we're to delight in it. If creation is good and excessive and it shows, you know, kind of God's nature, what should we think about ourselves? If we want to enjoy creation rightly, what do we need to think about ourselves? What's that? I heard someone. I heard a voice. No one else heard the voice. It's not good. Has been a long weekend, but I don't want to. What's that? We're creatures, and we talked about it in relation to if we're going to be creatures who enjoy the creation, what kind of creatures do we need to be? What's that? Yeah, childlike, right? Full. If creation is full of wonder, if it's wonderful, we should be full of wonder, right, in our embracing of it. We talked about how when we're young, that's not hard to do, right? Everything really is big and exciting, which is the glory of having little children. They remind you, like, I used to be a human being. I used to enjoy this stuff, too. And yet we can grow old and tired and miss what is beautiful and good about God's creation. So we're to look up, to give thanks, to grow down, right? To grow in humility, to realize not just that to embrace it, to be childlike, but that we didn't do anything to create it. We're really not as important as we think we are, that there's a lot of us around here and we're not holding this thing together, right? And we don't, on the grand scheme of world history, not many of our names will be remembered, right? And that's not a bad thing, that just is, right? Since that's true, and since we didn't do anything to make ourselves and we don't do anything to hold the world together, then in one sense we can relax, stop taking ourselves overly seriously, and enjoy what God has done for us in creation. Well, this morning, if all of that is true, if If you've been sold on that, I hope you have. I read a lot of verses last time, or at least some, and it's all true. Just take my word for it now. If we are going to grow down, if we're going to be thankful and be people who delight and partake of God's good gifts, we are going to need, in one sense, time to do that. That's another reality of our creation, right? We're finite beings. There's only so many given hours in a given day and so many given days in a given lifetime, right? That you only get so much. And it really does require time to embrace things rightly. And I'm not, and we'll talk about this, you know, hopefully this doesn't become a guilt trip of like, you got to really, you know, take hours and hours a day to do this. And it's one more law that will oppress you. But it doesn't take much to become attentive to things in the sense, it doesn't take much to be grateful if Christ really does play, as the poem says, you know, in 10,000 places. If Christ is everywhere revealing himself in his creation, then it just takes a moment of acknowledgement, right, to embrace some of that. But time is necessary. And so what I want to talk about today, and this will probably end up having to go a couple weeks because of the length of this, but I want to talk about, I guess, our cultural bent and then what the Bible says about the reality of time and leisure and our making use of things rightly. We live in a time in the midst of a culture where productivity and busyness are looked at as virtues in and of themselves. You know, we've talked about this before. We live, you know, in the world of optimization and your life hacks and technology where, you know, the real goal is to figure out how to do more things and do them more efficiently so that you can do some more things and then hopefully do those more efficiently. And that was the promise, really, of technology. If you look at, you know, the real technological boom as it began even earlier in our century, well, in the previous century, the goal was we were going to have all of this technology in order to free up the human being, in one sense, for leisure. But that is not what has taken place, right? We've been freed with more, you know, productivity to then produce more things or consume more things. And if we're not producing or being more active, we're then looking at the devices that were supposed to free us up to then go live. But now we're kind of trapped in this endless cycle of this is the thing that's setting me free, and you can tell by the fact that my head's bent over it all day long. Even our joys, you know, we've talked about before, if they're not documented, there's kind of this social reality that if, you know, if you're experiencing joy and you don't take a picture of it and let everyone know how joyful it was, you know, was it really even something worthwhile? You know, if it's not preserved in a photo, does the sunset even matter or this time, you know, with your children? You know, I've made the joke before, you know, if a party happens in the forest and it's not reported on your Instagram, you know, did it really make a sound? And that really is kind of the way of our day that, and you can feel it, right? You're having this moment and for a second, right? Everyone's lost in the enjoyment of a thing, which is where we're getting at in this whole talk. But if you forget everything, that's really the point of this, even if I don't get there. And then it's like, well, stop, hold on. We got to get a picture, right? You know, we got to get a picture. Why? To make sure people, you know, make sure everyone knows this was real. Like, this matters. We matter, you know. And again, this is not something that's always wrong. Obviously, you know, picture of your child blowing out their birthday candle, totally worthwhile. It's happened for centuries. It's not a modern thing. But we can get so caught up in it that we miss the real true joys of what leisure is trying to give us in a world that is telling us optimization is everything. I mean, you know, consider our culture in relation to even things like motherhood. In our day and age, you know, depending on what, you know, Pinterest page you're on or Instagram feed, you know, the overwhelming guilt that a young mother can feel, you know, in the with the idea that, you know, I didn't accomplish anything all day. You know, there's a lot built into that very phrase, right? What do we mean by that? You know, I didn't get anything done all day. What do we mean by that? I mean, did they? You know, you kept a human being alive who otherwise would not be kept alive on their own. You fed and nurtured and shaped, you know, a human soul that will, you know, ultimately go into adulthood. And, you know, but other than that, you know, you didn't accomplish anything, which means the things that you would have been accomplishing otherwise, like what are those things? You know, and culturally, it's like, well, you know, I didn't check these boxes of what's important, which is usually, again, productivity based on economic value or status, not things that were, you know, we're not gauging life by kind of these bigger, large order, defining realities, you know, family and humanity and what is meaning and so forth. But instead, we kind of hold busyness as a virtue and a badge of honor. A quote I've read before, but I think it gets to the heart of the matter, is I'm so busy. We say this to one another with no small degree of pride, as if our exhaustion were a trophy, our ability to withstand stress a real mark of character. And the busier we are, the more important we seem to ourselves and we imagine to others. To be unavailable to our friends and family, to be unable to find time for the sunset, to whiz through our obligations without time for a single mindful breath. This has become the model of a successful life. How many of us, you know, if given a day off, will feel guilty if we look back on it and we say, you know, I didn't do anything today or accomplish anything, you know, that I could look back on and say, see, that's finished. You know, there is this kind of built-in reality culturally. So if we live in a world of productivity, even our rest or our form of rest usually is in service to our busyness. You know, why do you take vacations? You know, culturally you take them, A, because I earned it, I worked real hard, I got this thing, but I also need it for what purpose? Yeah, to rest up to get back to work. The rest in and of itself is not a goal in that it is, you know, an end of in itself. It is serving work. You know, that work really is the thing. And rest is either, you know, a reward of work, which is really the thing, or what will then give us enough energy to get back to work and to do it well. And again, those things aren't untrue. It's just the question is that the truth? Is that why we, you know, we go about doing these things? Busyness in service to proving, to not only to rest for work, but I think our busyness, if we look at it, you know, philosophically, is a way of proving that we matter, right? Not just that, you know, work is good, but work and what I do, whatever that may be, makes me who I am. That if I am successful in this thing, then I matter, and you know, I find my meaning there. And if I'm not, then, you know, what does that say about me, culturally speaking? And that part is part of the quest, really, of fallen man. You know, all of us live under this burden of trying to be okay, you know, to justify ourselves, to say, you know, I really am all right in the world. And in our culture, when money and status and beauty and those sorts of things are the way that the world says you're all right, well, then you have to do those things well in order to say, like, see, I'm okay. Like, the all is right in my particular world. Or we become busy for the opposite reason, is that we realize we're not okay, and so if I just stay busy enough, I'll never have to think about it. You know, I'll never have to think about that there might be something off with me and my world. There might be something off with my value system. There might be something bigger than this life that I'm ignoring. There's a lot of reasons why I think we as an American culture go about trying to do this. You know, we try to avoid the void by amusing ourselves to death. T.S. Eliot, you know, in his lines, neither plenitude nor vacancy, only a flicker over the strained, time-ridden faces, distracted from distraction by distraction. And, you know, we see that in our American culture. It's like, if I just have something to do, see, watch, to be about, I don't have to think about the larger questions of life. And we were just had an elders retreat this weekend. And as we were sitting in one of the restaurants, we had our vision statement out. And the first, you know, line on it is, why do we exist? Now, the lady read it with a whole lot deeper, you know, our waitress, you know, why do we exist? Maybe she thought it was a track. You know? But she read that and she's like, oh, I'm out. Like, I don't want to be a part of this conversation. Like, those are the kind of questions I don't want to have to even think about or try to answer. And that really, you know, that's not just, you know, a one-off by some random person. That really is a lot of what we've become about. Like, I don't want to think about the larger questions of life because that might mean, you know, I would have to evaluate myself and see if I'm okay, or that would have to mean, you know, maybe I'd have to change some things, or I have to answer to somebody, and, you know, who needs that? I'll just keep, you know, being about what I'm about. You know, so we seek to, you know, be busy in order to be okay. As Madonna, you know, so poignantly spoke, my drive in life is from this horrible fear of being mediocre. And that's always pushing me. Because even though I've become somebody, I still have to prove I am somebody. My struggle has never ended, and it probably never will. And I've read that quote before, but if you watch at all what goes on online these days, you'll know how true that quote is recently. Madonna is still trying to prove that she is somebody. And it's getting harder all the time. You know, the older you get, if that was if your life was based on, you know, being a sex symbol in your youth, that's a hard gig to keep up. You know, as you start to lose the fading realities of youth, you know, you have to try to resist or really fight against gravity in all kinds of unnatural ways. You know, we're busy to avoid the void, or trying to be busy to be okay, or busy to gain, you know, to acquire an identity, you know, to do more and be more. And again, that's built into our society. If you think of, you know, what it means in one sense to be an American, if we could take off all the veneer, no one would say this out loud, but part of what it means to be a good American is to be a consumer. I mean, how many people in public office, you know, encourage you to do your civic duty of go about buying stuff, you know, in order to keep the economy going? And this is, you know, hey, you know, jobs have never been better, so you should go out and spend more money for Christmas and make sure that, you know, these particular numbers are hit, and the whole thing just keeps on moving so we'll all be all right. But we are consumers, and in one sense, it's a, you're almost shamed if you're satisfied, right? So, I mean, if you're okay with the stuff you bought last year, and, you know, the car you were driving, it's like, what kind of loser are you, you know, that you're still okay with that? You need to be on about the next thing. Like, that was something that was last year's thing. And in order to be a good consumer, you need to, you know, get rid of that and fill your closets or your garages or whatever with new things. All of these realities are hints and reflections of the fact that something is horribly awry in us as people. If we act like slaves, right, with our busyness and our need and so forth, if we act like slaves, either we are slaves or we have to baptize our slavery and call it something else, right? We either have to say, something's really wrong, man, who would live like this if they didn't have to? Or we have to say, like, no, this is a perfectly normal way to live. This is the right, and again, that's what we've done as a culture. There, you know, things are awry, and then we've just called them good in order to avoid the fact that something might be, you know, horribly wrong with us. We refuse to do things like contemplate, to sit still, and to think about all that is, you know, the good and the true and the beautiful. And we say that that's good. It's good to busy your mind with things. It's good for, you know, entertainment to just be an escape. You know, which was never even the goal of true entertainment. You know, and you got to be careful. It is an escape. You know, Tolkien would say, you know, the whole, you know, goal of a good story is to escape, but not from the world, not to, like, just, you know, I just got to forget about the, to escape to the true world, right? To remember what, like, all good entertainment is a reminder of, like, you've forgotten why you're alive. You've forgotten what true living is. But we've turned that around. It's like, no, I just need to shut my mind off for 2 hours and not think about anything. But in the process of acting like slaves, refusing to contemplate, we end up losing our humanity, and every one of us knows it. We all feel it. I mean, you know, look in the, you know, dead, dull eyes walking out of Costco, and, like, we all know. Like, somehow we lost it, and no one's talking about it, you know. And then be there when they give a sample out. And all these people act like they've never eaten before in their whole lives. Carts full of $400 worth of groceries, and they're like, but you're going to give me a half a free jalapeno popper? I will knock you out to get it. To take a moment, you know, to consider a rose, or even as our Savior said, to consider the lilies. you know, to take in, as we've mentioned, a sunset. For the pragmatist who believes in only producing, the question would be why? Why do things of no monetary value that gain you no status and won't do anything to fulfill your consuming needs, right? Because it will come and it will vanish and there's no way to mark it, which again is why we've got to take a picture and plaster it up there. And you don't ever do it. You don't put the picture of the fight you just had with your kids trying to get them to take that picture. You just put the picture of the kids. No. We lose the truest sense of what it means, again, to be human beings. What is good? Why are we here? Where are we going? What does this all mean? The kind of questions that really are part and parcel of what it means to be a human made in the image of God. If you jettison those questions from your life altogether, then what is life, really? And what are you doing here? But as a culture, we've thought, like, those are questions that are unanswerable, so forget them, and just answer the immediate question of what do I want, or what will make me feel good, or what will get me ahead in a race that I'm not sure where it even ends, right? How do you get ahead if you don't know where you're going, right? How do you know you're not getting behind? You know, these are questions that if you don't ask yourself, you will truly be lost. But the question is, where is the space in our culture to even ask those questions, to contemplate those things, to sit and inquire, or just to even enjoy the true and the good and the beautiful? And this is what historically has been called leisure. And it's been something that I think has been lost on our culture. We still have leisure, but it comes in, you know, two forms. What's leisure now in our culture? What are some things that have that word or connotation in them? When you think of leisure, what do you think of? Sports, right? So, which is, we'll talk about a form of leisure, but not the way we do it often. Not when retirement, yeah. Which retirement normally comes, you know, leisure equals, you know, I stop working and I get a motorhome from, you know, Leisure World or whatever. And that really is, you know, kind of the, you know, Chevy Chase vacation model of this is what leisure is. Or, you know, we had a phase in our history where leisure suits were a thing. Which I don't know what those had to do with leisure other than, you know, they were highly flammable if you rubbed into too many of them. The cool part about the OPC is the leisure suit has not gone out of style. You don't know what a leisure suit is? Oh, it's just an amazing polyester coat suit. You know, just Google it. It's a beautiful thing. A lot of wide collars, wide lapels. They're still around. Come to Presbytery this weekend. We lose the capacity if we don't ask those questions, you know, what is good and why are we here and where are we going? We lose the capacity and the desire to delight in the right things if we don't answer those questions. Things that will expand us as people instead of close us in on ourselves. And hopefully, even if, you know, this isn't something that you're in conversation about often, you can feel it. Do you ever feel that you're becoming less human sometimes? I mean, that you're just like, things that used to, you know, give me this joy, now just, everything's just a burden. Or, you know, that you feel that you're getting smaller. Well, that's something that, you know, this culture will do to you if you don't actively fight against it. Like, part of it's just our fallen condition as sinners. And part of it is that, you know, cultures are, you know, emanations of people's reality. And therefore, they also join in closing us in on ourselves. If we want to be expanded, we do need time. And so leisure is time for the good. You know, what if we're going to define what leisure is, and we'll get into it, in a simple way, it's simply time to embrace that which is good, time to contemplate and to enjoy that which is good. And as we've learned, and part of what we're going to talk about in this series, part of why, you know, we're a liturgical church, part of why we keep seasons during the year, we keep feasts, is that if you don't mark time, if you don't say, I'm cutting away this part of time for this thing, the calendar of our world will force you into doing something with its time, right? You're on a calendar, whether you like it or not, whether you're on the school year calendar or the work week calendar or whatever, someone is telling you what to do with your time. And if you don't have in your mind what is important, how you're going to mark time first, if you know, you'll notice time used to be marked the year of our Lord, right? such and such. What are you saying about time? Yeah, everything's in God's hands. The time belongs to God, you know. And now it's like, how can we get rid of, you know, anything that has to do with those words? And we'll just talk about, you know, well, it's, you know, football season, or it's the school year, or, you know, and again, there are things that mark our time, and therefore, whether we, you know, whether we acknowledge it or not, time shapes us, right? You are who you are because of a series of thoughts, ideas, actions, raising over a long period of time, right? And then you've been formed into a certain sort of person. Well, if we're going to be shaped and reshaped, part of how we're going to do that is by attacking, you know, maybe that's a bad word for it, by stopping and allow, and marking time in a deliberate way, being intentional about what time is, what it means, and what's really important, and that importance being reflected on what we do with our time, right? What's important to us, you know, at the end of our lives, you know, you always hear all these sayings. Well, at the end of your, you know, you'll never say, I wish I worked more overtime or whatever. And people say that, and we go, oh, yeah, you're right, and we get sad at that moment in the movie, and then we just go on about our business. But the reality is you show what you value by where you put all of your attention, right? You know, that's pretty normal. And obviously there are certain things in life that are unavoidable. You know, I need to work to eat, so I got to get up and do that. But if we don't say, okay, I'm going to forcibly mark time in a certain way, in order for my good and the good of my people and the good of my community, someone else will mark it for you. They will tell you, even before the end of Thanksgiving Day, that it is now Black Friday and you must shop, right? They will do that to you, whether you like it or not. And if you don't have an intentional resistance to it, guess what? You're just going to be going down the stream with everybody else. And not because you're a bad person, but that's just how we work. If we don't have a plan, someone's going to put a plan into effect for us. And the church has always had a way of combating the false reality of time just marching on without any change. Because, you know, that's one of the lies of our day. We all know that we die, but we act like there's no big story in the world, right? Life just always goes on the same. So what you, and what does that mean? If life always just goes on the same, you're born and you die, what should you do with, you know, the time in between those two markers? What should you do? What's that? Well, if there is no eternity, and if this is all there is, and you're born and you die, and the world's going to go on without you forever and ever and ever, what should you do with your time? Yeah, exactly. Like, well, you know, if you only live once, then you got to make the most of what you have right now, right? And then, you know, then you got to define, well, what does the most mean? And people do that in various and different ways. If there is no larger story overarching this creation, then there really isn't anything more than your personal narrative and filling that up with as much stuff as you can now, which is the world in which we live. Which again, if we're not intentionally resistant to, will be the world in which you live, and then you'll just put Jesus on it, right? And just be like, and Jesus, you know. But I'm not sure how he shapes any of my time. I just know that I want, you know, to fill all my days with as much as I can and have, you know, happiness defined by the culture's definition of happiness, and then hopefully heaven. As instead of, if this world is heading somewhere, how does the end of this story determine how I should mark my days now in the middle of this story? Which again would require time to even begin to ask those questions. I went off way off the notes there. So back to what we were talking about. Leisure is time for the good. Let's put it this way. You know, if this is a subject that, you know, there's a lot of great books on it, but I'm going to forget his name. Don't do that. Leisure, the basis of culture. Pieper. Joseph Pieper's work on this has influenced most of my thinking on this. And so he puts it in these terms. You know, if a normal day is a working day, is that a true statement? Yes. Why is that a true statement? Yeah, because the Bible tells me so, right? 6 days a man shall labor, and on the seventh day he shall rest. So a normal day is a working day. Then leisure is its counterpart. So what we're saying is like, okay, there is this, you know, reality that we have a work-a-day life, but there's also this reality that there's this other thing, And the other thing is not the workaday life. And again, it's more than that, but it's the counterpart or the different part of what this, what we call a week is, according to Scripture. We do need this time to stop what has been traditionally thought about as a hiatus, to not just stop and then be blank, but to stop and to reaffirm who we are as human beings, to remember why we're here, to be recharged, but to be recharged not by just I'm taking time to take a nap, but to be recharged in the sense of this is what life really is, so that I can go back into that workaday world realizing, while this is the main part of this life, that is not all that life is. That life will end with a different story as well, which we'll speak of about in a moment. If work is putting our hands to something in order to accomplish something, right, to complete a task, leisure has, again, as its counterpart and at its root, a desire to enjoy something, to take something in, to absorb something, not to take hold of something to mold it, but to sit back and to behold something, to enjoy it and to understand it in a true act of contemplation. Not to understand it to master it, but to understand it as best we can finitely to appreciate and to just embrace it. Now, are you seeing a difference there? And we'll flesh this out more and more. But so working is what, you know, we talk about dominion mandate. We take the world and we reshape it, we craft it for the use of something that will then produce something useful. Leisure as its counterpart is, let's not talk about something being useful. Let's just talk about something being beautiful and being worthwhile for just being beautiful. You know, let's just behold it and appreciate it for what it is and not try to dominate it or overtake it. And part of why that's so necessary, I'm going to end up tripping all over what's coming next because I'm just going to say it and then we'll pretend we didn't hear it when I get to it in my notes, is that if we're always putting our hands to something to dominate it, we can begin to believe what about ourselves? That we actually control all that is. Whereas a moment of leisure, you know, when you're watching a sunset and you say, man, I'm pretty small. And I didn't do anything to make the sun rise or set. And as a matter of fact, you know, all those things I dominated, I might show up on Monday, they might be undone. You know, and I'm not sure if I'll even be here next week because I'm just a human who's, you know, breath is, you know, one at a time, and sometimes my people's heart stops, and that's the end of it. You begin to realize I'm not in control of everything. In fact, I'm in control of very little. And, A, that's okay, because, you know, all these things I am beholding speak to someone else who is in control of everything. But it makes me appreciative because all of a sudden I'm a needy one as opposed to one who is a domineering one. Which, again, especially if you're good at what you do, can become a real threat, not just to your humility, but to your humanity. You can begin to think more of yourself than is actually true. And leisure and contemplation is one of those places where you remember what is really true. And then that hopefully sends you back into the things that are also good, work, with a different frame of mind and a different way of going about it. But to engage in an act of leisure, to say, you know what, stop. You know, like, stop trying to accomplish anything today. That would presuppose several things about us. What sort of things would that presuppose about us? If you're going to say to yourself or to your neighbor, you need time to reflect, you need time for leisure, you need time for contemplation, what would that say about our humanity? What would that tell us about ourselves as far as presuppositions are concerned? Yeah, so number one, it's a production isn't everything. If you're going to convince someone stop producing, you're going to have to also answer the question like, well, why would I do that? Like, I could work one more day and get more stuff or, you know, whatever. I could work on my status for I could go, you know, glad-handing everyone and making more contacts and networking or whatever. So you'd have to be able to affirm as a presupposition, man is not a producer first and foremost. That's not his sole and primary purpose and identity. That man is more than a worker, he's more than a producer, that there is more to this life than accomplishment and acquisition. That there's something bigger than that. that has to be true in order for leisure to be worthwhile at all, which is an interesting concept. What happens to a world if you take God and eternity out of it? What happens is stores are open 24/7, 7 days a week. That's what starts to happen. And look around. That is what's happening. We don't need to get into that too much yet. Okay, we've got to finish this section at least. The whole Cartesian project, René Descartes, is at war with Christianity, and it finds, in one sense, part of its real-life application here. Descartes' goal, one of his goals, was to have the sciences be able to explain the world in such a way that one would no longer have cause to wonder. There would be nothing to be mystified about, because we can explain it. Like, if you can tell me why lightning happens, then we don't need to think that there's gods anymore that throw lightning bolts. That's silly, right? If I can explain, then I can dominate. And if I can dominate, then there is no one bigger than me that we really are. Man really is the measure of all things. There's no reason to wonder when you can simply Google it, right, and have the answer. It's interesting, I was talking, well, it doesn't matter, I don't have time for that. We talked about a couple weeks ago that one guy, he's a baker, and he says, there's nothing mysterious about the cake, any more than there's anything mysterious about my own hand. It's like, yeah, well, tell me exactly why does yeast make all this happen? Like, how does that happen? Like, how does the magic of yeast work? Explain that to me for a second, and you can give a description. But if you talk to people who are truly, into winemaking and baking, there is an element where they just say, like, that part's just a mystery. It's magic that happens and takes place. And there really is, again, that would take a moment of contemplation to sit and reflect, which is why when we talk about leisure, I don't mean like, we get Zen and try to, find nirvana. You can just take a long time, considering that loaf of bread that's right in front of you and be like, this is pretty amazing. John, is yeast amazing or no? C.S. Lewis described the opposite of this very, very well when he described the character Eustace Scrub. So I'll read this quote. We're going to probably have to end here. I'm going to say something that pretends to wrap this section up, and then we'll close, and then we'll talk about it next week. There was a boy called Eustace Clarence Scrub, and he almost deserved it. His parents called him Eustace, and his masters called him Scrub. I can't tell you how his friends called him, for he had none. He didn't call his father and mother, but Harold and Alberta. They were very up-to-date and advanced people. They were vegetarians, non-smokers, and teetotalers. And they wore a special kind of underclothes. Eustace Clarence liked animals, especially beetles, if they were dead and pinned on a card. He liked books, if they were books of information, and had pictures of grain elevators or of fat foreign children doing exercises in model schools. He had managed to hear them talking about Narnia, and he loved teasing them about it. He thought, of course, that they were making it all up, for he was far too stupid to make anything up himself. He did not approve of that. But that really is what Descartes is going for. He wants us in a world where we say, like, I don't need to watch the beetle crawl on the ground and be amazed at this creature and realize, like, where do beetles come from? Who makes these things? I know I can't make, but no, what we want to do is, kill them, pin them on the board, and examine them for the sake of information and solely domination, and not for finding meaning or figuring out who we are as people. And that really, as we go through, I promise you this is what this is all going toward, is that leisure is that moment, or are those moments in time, or dedicated moments of time, to simply contemplate, which, as I'm going to give you the cliff notes, which is your destiny. I mean, the beatific vision, the idea of beholding God and just being, again, you're not going to be beholding him like, well, I'm going to write a systematics text next week, so I'm going to really, identify and be able to describe all that God is, and then I'm scientifically going to write it down so that I can teach someone about it. You are going to be in wonder and awe of his glory and of his grace, right? And you will never be more of a human being than you are at that moment. But that is the goal of your life, is to see and enjoy the goodness and the glory of God. And therefore, if that's what it means to be truly human at the end of the story, the idea that you can get there well without taking time presently in the midst of the story to do the same thing, again, is very backwards and odd. And yet it is, again, I don't think on our frontal lobe, but it's become the very norm of our existence. Just keep whirring and whizzing about with no time for a really deliberate thought, and everything will be okay, as long as the bills are getting paid and everyone's getting, you know, the next new thing. And what we as Christians should be doing is, you know, revoking that as our normal mode of living and becoming intentional about how can we keep time well so that we don't lose what it means to be truly human. And again, a lot of this plays into, you know, it's very hard to describe sometimes. Well, why do you guys do what you do at Providence? It's not because, you know, we just like to make everyone feel as awkward as possible. Like, you know, what are they doing down the street? Let's do it, you know, the exact opposite and make it really weird so that everyone's very uncomfortable when they visit. It's intentioned, we're hoping it's intentioned, to be at combat with the portions of our culture that are killing us, but that are so, they're incessant, but they're also seemingly innocuous. They come to us in very subtle ways and just slowly tear away at the fibers of what it means to be a person made in the image of God, delighting in his goodness and loving other people. And if we don't do something to be at war with that, we will become what we're being molded into.